This is a graphically novel, a podcast by two brothers who like each other but love comic books. I'm Jamie.
I'm Sam.
And there used to be a third brother. And despite the fact that he is the youngest of the trio, he has already retired from podcasting. So, yep. The snide comments won't be retired, though. We will be casting some side eye. Josh's way all along, which I don't even think he'll listen to the podcast, so it doesn't matter. He'll never know. But we will soldier on.
Yeah, always.
And this week we will be reviewing, without Josh, to his absolute loss. We're reviewing Something Is Killing the Children, Volume 1. And I was pumped to reread this thing, and I'm pumped to talk about it with my bro.
That's great. I don't want to say much until we get going. Like, I want to talk about it. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get our single issue spotlight out of the way, and then we'll jump into it. All right, so it's a single issue spotlight. So the whole idea of graphically novels, we review graphic novels, not individual, you know, single issues. But we are also a fan of the single issue. So we do a spotlight here at the beginning. And I get to go first, and my single issue spotlight this week is Predator versus Wolverine number 1. And when I added this to my pull list and picked it up, I expected this just to be big slugfest, just big dumb fight, entertaining, but not a lot going on. And it's not a lot more than that, but it is a little more than that. There's a different angle going on here, and it's more than I expected. And so I was kind of surprised by, I think that was really what made me more into this book, because I was surprised by the angle they took. And so I don't want to give it away. It's kind of a little bit of a spoiler, I guess. But Ben Percy's knocking out of the park. Ben Percy should write Wolverine forever, maybe. The art is solid, and there's lots of cool covers. I think for each issue, there's going to be multiple covers. So, yeah, I highly recommend going and grabbing Predator versus Wolverine number 1. I think every shop ordered, like, a lot of them. So you should still be able to get one.
Yeah, they're on the shelf still. And it is big, dumb fun. I like it a lot.
Yeah. But there's a little more creativity to it than I expected.
Me too. It really is. I like the twist and angle, like you said, they took on. So for my single issue spotlight, I'm doing Transformers that just hit the shelves. And it is a straight throwback to the 80s. It's drawn. The characters are all there. But it starts off with a bang. And it never stops. It never lights up. And there's some twists and unexpected turns in the very first issue that I was not expecting to have. And so if you've been reading Void Rivals, that's what led up to where we're at in Transformers 1. So it all ties it together. And it is a phenomenal ride. I'd say it's better than Wolverine, but it's worth a read if you like Transformers.
Is it set in the same time frame as Void Rivals?
Yes.
Interesting. So they could cross over.
They're going to cross over. I'm sure of it. Nice. Void Rivals. So here's how it's going to work. Void Rivals, Transformers, and then it's going to be Duke is the next one out in this world. Cobra Commander, then G.I. Joe. And all those titles are in the same world. They're all going to be connected somehow.
I'm curious how it's going to go, man.
It's Kirkman at his best. He's building this world, and it's going to be amazing.
I trust Kirkman. I'm sure it's going to be good.
Well, from what, like I say, I've read all the Void Rivals, and this my spotlight, this Transformers, it is snowballing, man. It's getting better and better.
It's awesome. I will pick up my copy of Transformers this week. So maybe it'll be my spotlight next week. We'll see.
I mean, it's worth two spotlights.
All right, well, let's get back to Something Is Killing the Children, and we'll lead off with the Comixology summary, which, of course, never fails us. here we go. When the children of Archer's Peak begin to go missing, everything seems hopeless. The few children that return alive have terrible stories, impossible details of terrifying creatures that live in the shadows. Their only hope is the arrival of a mysterious stranger, one who believes the children and claims to be the only adult who sees what they can see. Her name is Erica Slaughter. She kills monsters. That is all she does, and she bears the cost because it must be done. That almost sounds like an 80s TV show.
Yeah. I don't know where they're getting children. There's There's only one survivor.
Yeah. There's always something a little off about a Comixology summary, but
yeah. Anywho, spoilers.
Anywho, all right. So let's do the creator credits. This thing was written by James Tinney in the IV, one of my current favorite writers. Illustrated by, and I'm about to butcher some names. I think it's Werther Deledra, Deledera, maybe.
Yeah, sounds right.
Colors by Miguel Muerto, lettered by And World Design.
Okay.
Anyway, so those are the folks responsible for the book we've read. And now it's time for the live-action Batman grades. This is our eccentric grading scale based on the men who have thus far played Batman in live action. And for best or worst, that scale is Bale Pattinson, Affleck, Keaton West, Kilmer, and poor George Clooney. And you can see the rest right there.
West is definitely not that far up.
Yeah, no, not even close. But Sam, you get the privilege of giving your grade out first. What you got?
Okay, this would get full honors for me, but there's one thing that drags it down. Or you know what it is already. So I'm still giving it to Pattinson. Love the story, love the characters, love everything about it. It's just one little tiny thing keeps it from being top notch for me.
The art snob's bag.
Never left.
So what are you sitting on?
Pattinson?
Yeah. All right. I went full Bale. Now, you and I are both, we love a good comic horror story. I think this is a great one. I think the art wouldn't work for every story, but I think it really works for this story. And we'll get into that in the section for it later. I think it's a page turner, man. Like, once you start, you're just going to read it to the end. It's hard to stop. And so, I mean, and we'll get into more reasons why, but this is an absolute bail for me. I love this thing. I've read every issue. It's awesome.
I have to. Several times, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, this is probably my fourth or fifth read of the first volume.
Yeah, we had to wait on a couple issues for a while, so I had to reread.
Yeah. It's good stuff, though. But now we can get into the nitty-gritty. Yeah, so if you've been, haven't read the book yet and you're on the fence, and you're going to read it on our recommendation. We both gave high grades. Bale and Pattinson, super high grades. Go grab it. Read it. It's on Comixology Unlimited. It's on Hoopla. It's easily accessible. It's in every comic book shop you can find. Go read it. Come back and enjoy the rest of the show. But now it's time for the graphically novel pyramid, the part of the show where we evaluate the book of the week based on the three elements we believe a book has to nail to be a good book. And the first of these is story. And Sam, you get to go first on story.
So the story is probably one of my favorite parts of this on the pyramid. The story is just, it hooks you in like right off, like you said, it's a page turner. You can't stop with it. And it, literally the first page is her coming out of the woods after killing a monster. And then she's covering just talking. Covering gore. She's talking to this little girl in a wheelbarrow. Not a wheelbarrow. She's in a
flyer. Little red wagon.
Red wagon. Yeah. And just that little scene right there. What is going on? I got to know what this lady's story is. I want to keep reading this. So it's like you said, it's a scary mystery, murder mystery. Like there's kids being murdered all across the country, and she's going from town to town. She got this one person on the phone, don't know who it is yet, and he's just a director. He's like, hey, we're kids are coming up missing here. You need to go there. So that's kind of how the story builds up. And then what I like about it, she goes to these towns to find the monsters and kill it. While she's there, these other adults are there, and then they can't see the monster. They don't know what's going on, so they think she's the murderer. So she's always in trouble with the police or whoever. And it's a really good take on the how she kills the monsters and how the adults can't see. It's like the hidden world from the adults that she's the only one can go in to see.
Yeah, I love it. I'm with you, man. It really sucks you in. I mean, It's just a gripping story. It doesn't really let you go. I love the world building though. I mean, that's one of my favorite things. Like how and the longer the series goes, the more deep you get into that. But you get in the first volume, you get hints, about who's center there and how it all works. And you get glimpses of people wearing different colors of masks and a guy with like a golden mask type situation. You're like, well, what's this about? And there's this whole secret society of people who know about the monsters, and it's their job to hunt them. It's really intriguing. And there's these and the little dolls they all have around, and you see in the glimpse you get, you see that they all have that doll. It's not just her.
Yeah.
And so there's all this stuff that's just like, it's just so intriguing. Like, what? Yeah. And it's so, I think, well thought out.
That's why he does well too. Tenyon does that really well. Just the way he builds stories. Because about anything that he's written, I will read and I enjoy it because he's done so many stuff. But this is another one of those he can add to his collection of great stories and the way he builds the world. I mean, and it's not just a story, but like it's all three of his, like the story characters, just everything is great in it.
Yeah. And I want to highlight too the pacing. It's just so well paced. I mean, it feels like you're just blazing through the story, like moving so fast. But at the same time, like the actual plot and like the mystery behind it all gets unpacked really slowly. And I love that balance. And so it's just really strong. And it's for my money, it's probably the strongest corner of the Pyramid of Story.
I agree. The story is just is phenomenal.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to art. I think it works for the story. I think Werther Deliadra, his art, I think it works really good for this kind of horror story. Like the way he draws. I mean, there's some wonky faces in here. That's some real, the lady on the bus that she's talking to, it looks like a mummy. But like he's really good at capturing emotion. Like you can see James's fear on his face. You can see his turmoil. You can see like Erica's eyes, just even though she's not communicating anything like much at all, her eyes communicate so much. So the way he draws the monsters and the action. I mean, it's so, I mean, I imagine that's why he got this job. He turned in a couple of character designs for these monsters, like, oh, hired, because they're so good.
I'll say, I agree with the monsters, the gore, the scary, spooky woods, the way he builds the characters, but like the atmosphere, like whether they're in the spooky woods or they're in a town, just all the background. Like I do enjoy it. I just have a hard time with some of the people's faces sometimes. The proportions are off. Like you said, the lady on the bus, she did look like the Crypt Keeper to me. I mean, she was bad.
Yeah.
But you're right. I said the art's good. It does good for the story and all that stuff. It's just I wish some of the stuff was better. And that's the reason I knocked it down just a little bit. I mean, it's still a great, great art. Just I wish it was better. I wish the faces were better was the big thing. Just can't get over some of just the average looking people. They don't look average. They look, I don't know. And they're not consistent either. Like the Tommy character, I think he changed a lot through the whole thing. So if they were just more consistent, I would like it better. I do. I just struggle with the people's faces is really what killed me.
Yeah. And there are some weird ones. I mean, even like people that are important characters that like you recognize and you know who they are. There's still some inconsistencies in the faces, and there's just some weird ones.
There's definitely some weird ones, like you said, like the characters, main characters, like the sheriff, Tommy, and all that stuff. Sometimes if they don't say their name or have interaction with somebody else, I wouldn't know who they were.
Yeah, yeah, and like once you start meeting a few more of the cops, and they all wear the same uniform, it's like come on, man. I think the sheriff had a mustache. That's how I know who he is. I mean, that's about it.
But you know, saying all that, the negatives on that. But overall, I did like the art. I did think the art was good. I like the colors on the screen, on the panels were really good. Like her design, just with the one eye usually poking out with her big black mask on, it's eye catching. It really is. So like, I mean, they done some really good things. I just think the one thing brought it down.
I'm glad you mentioned the color though. The color work in here is fantastic. Miguel Muerto killed it, and I think the color work does like a lot of the heavy lifting for setting the mood for this book.
It does. Yep, and that's part of the like I said the atmosphere, the world they built with the art, the creepy stuff, and the color and his art brings it together. And then like sometimes like just on this one panel, trying to find it, it's mostly just her face and then that one green eye popping out.
Yeah.
And that just like stole the whole page. Like as soon as you turn to it, like that's what my eyes were drawn to is that face with that eyeball. Like, man, that's crazy.
But they do that a lot. And especially her doing, kind of gave me the side eye, of that one uncovered eye. Just a little bit of glowing green peeking out. Yeah, it's good. All right, Sam, lead us off on characters.
So, I normally have a hard time with characters, but this time I feel like the characters was another strong point of the pyramid for me. I really like the characters in this because it's just like the story. Like, as soon as you meet Erica, you want to know what her story is. You're captured by this lady. It's just covered in gore. Like, what's her deal? And then as you read it, you get to see who she is. She's a hardcore, but she also wants to help people, stop kids, and she knows what's going on. She doesn't know how to interact with everybody, so she has, I guess, people person problems. But you know, and saying that, she's not just the only character though. Like, you got the sheriff Joe we talked about. You got Tommy, and you got the who's that? The kid James. James. And all of them are very distinct characters, and you can see them evolve as it goes. Like, especially the sheriff, you can see him evolve, and they started accepting, like, oh yeah, she's here to help. Let's let her do her thing, release her, whatever. And then Tommy, as soon as he found out what was going on, started blaming her. And then towards the end, he's like, oh yeah, she's here to help. And then he helped rescue kids at the end. So I thought overall their characters were phenomenal and had good arcs with them.
I think that Tinian avoids a slight mistake he makes sometimes. He's got a habit of having absolutely huge casts in his books. Like at Nice House on the Lake, there's like, 14 people introduced in the very first issue. And you're supposed to keep up with them all along. I have trouble keeping them straight.
Yeah.
He did the same thing a little bit with World Tree.
Tree, yep.
I have trouble sometimes. Like, the casts are so big. Like, he introduced them so quickly. Whereas here, eventually the cast does get big, but it takes time. He you know, adds them along slowly. And so here, like, we just have Erica and James for most of this book, and we get to really focus on them. And he does such a really good job making us care about these folks. And even like Tommy, we find out about his, you know, sister right off the bat, and we see, like, even he's doing, like, stuff that we know is dumb, and he's just hindering everything they're trying to do, but we know why he's doing it. So you still kind of feel for him. You know, he's grieving over his sister because he knows his sister's not alive anymore. He knows there's no way. But he's trying to get revenge, basically, and he's trying to stop more kids from getting hurt. So, like, you know, you kind of, you know, empathize with him, but at the same time, you're like, dude, just stop. Just please. You're hindering this.
Yeah.
But Tini, and he when he's not blowing the cast out, he does a really good job of, like, little quick moments of making you, like, really quick characterization. Like, you get people real fast.
Yep.
And he does a really good job of that here. And so even like the sheriff, we figure out who he is, like, super fast. And he just does such a masterful job here of doing that.
And I know, like you said, though, I think it's because it's a smaller cast.
Yeah.
And I feel more attached to this cast than I do to some of his other stories. I agree with that.
Like, I love Nice House on the Lake. I think it's a brilliant story. But as far as the individual characters, I know I can remember about half of them.
Yep.
Like distinctive things about them.
Yep. And almost same thing with World Tree, though.
Yeah.
So
you were bragging earlier about all the great Tinian stories. There is one I quit.
Which one's that?
The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos.
Yeah.
I read that first issue, man. It did nothing for me.
I agree with you on that one. Looked at it and I set it back down. I was like, I ain't gonna buy this one.
I mean, I'm committed at this point. Every first issue of a new James Tinian series, I'm gonna pick up the first issue because he surprised me. Like, those several of these books, I didn't think I was gonna dig, and they've all been bangers. But like that one is like, nope, not on this one.
Swing and a miss.
Yep. Now, what were you gonna say?
Before we move on to awards, I have a question I should ask it during story.
Okay.
So in the story, when they're, this is towards the end, when they're fighting the monster, and Tommy shows up. So I don't even think about it. I'm talking about Tommy and Kirk. They're having this big battle or whatever, and then he sees her, like, fighting this invisible thing or whatever. But towards the end, she punches him, like, James is shot. So she does that gold thing and stabs him in the head so he can see the monster. But as soon as she does that, she hands him the kids and he runs away. What was the point of doing that? Why didn't he just run away anyways? She just shouldn't have had to have done that so he could see the monster.
Well, he was going to keep fighting her. Because he, even though he saw her like floating in the air, like he was refusing to believe it until he could see it. And then he understood, like, hey, if I'm going to help anybody, I got to help these kids. That's my read on it. That there was no way he was going to get out of her way until they realized she was fighting something else.
Okay. I'll take
that. He was refusing to believe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame him. I'd have a hard time, too.
Yeah.
That's my only question towards the story.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird moment, though. And they never explain how that little gold thing, that little gold temple stabby thing works.
So. Yeah, a little pin.
Yeah. All right. We'll give out some awards.
Let's do it.
All right. So I'm up first on best cover. And so for the main cover, I'm going to go with, let me flip to the back of the book here for the cover gallery. I'm going to go with cover one, the one with her. Where's it at? They put them out of order, didn't they? But it's the one where she's, I think they made it the cover of the whole first
overall volume. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's sort of looking into the woods and it's just this kind of ominous, creepy sort of vibe. And I just love that entire image. It's just, I think it's a good piece of art. And I think it really sets the tone for the book you're about to read. Some of these covers are outright lies, but that cover tells the absolute truth about what you're about to get into.
Yeah, I agree. And I do like that one. That one probably should have been my pick, but I didn't pick it. For my main pick, issue two, the solid red one on page 115. That's a real cover. It's not a very interesting. Something about that red, the red, solid red cover. Just imagine having that as a single issue. That would just really stand out in your collection, just having that solid red book. That's why I picked it.
And that might be a wall book.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that. That's kind of why I picked that one.
All right, well, so my favorite variant, if we ever do more Something's Killing Children, the variant will always be a Jenny Friesen variant because I love Jenny Friesen's covers. Mm-hmm. I think she should be as famous as Peach Momoko. Peach Momoko, I mean, she does some good covers here and there. I'm not a huge Peach fan. I wish Jenny Friesen was as famous as Peach because I love her art. And so the digital copy, it's page 114.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. And the way she's holding the knife in front of the eye. So they keep the eye covered.
Yeah, they keep the eye covered.
Consistently. But it's reflecting the eye of the monster she's fighting. The whole thing is just awesome.
And that one green eye. I don't know what it is, but that character design of hers is, I don't know. I agree. This is the one I picked too. And every time my shop has a Jenny Friesen cover, I buy that instead of the main cover. I've got several of her covers in my collection.
I've got one above me on the wall right here. I've got a foil Jenny Friesen hanging.
I don't have a foil yet.
Right in front of me. Oh, it's nice, dude. But it's a very similar cover, but she's in like a fighting stance. Mm-hmm. And the knife she's holding across her eye is foil.
Oh, man, that's cool. That would be cool.
Dude, it's a cool cover.
I got one where her mask, like you open it up, and you see the full face where you close it, and it's got the mask over. It's like a two-piece cover.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
She should be more famous, I agree.
I think she might be more, I mean, she might be my favorite cover artist. She's awesome.
She's up there. She really is.
Yeah.
I'm still a Clayton Crane fan. Anytime he puts anything out, I buy it.
It's true. I still see as many Clayton Crane covers as I used to.
I agree. That's why I say every time I see one, I try to grab it.
Yeah. All right, Sam, what's your best character?
Best character. I have Erica Slaughter. Obviously, she's the best. But then also done a slash, and I really like Tommy. I understand Tommy's struggle, what he's going through. I would side with him. I get what you're doing. Like, your sister's missing. You're pretty sure she's dead, and this lady's showing up. Yeah, I like Tommy's story a lot. I like his character.
See, the thing about Tommy is, like, he falls into that, like, antagonist, not really a villain category. Yeah. Like, he's clearly the antagonist. He's in the way. But, like, from the second that knife falls out of her bag in that restaurant, everything he does makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
I get it. Yep.
Yeah. So.
I'm with you. I've got Erica. I mean, she's just tough. You know, she's just such a cool character. And one of the rules, I think, for writers should always be, like, make your characters do interesting stuff. Just make them make interesting decisions. Make them do intriguing stuff. Like, kind of like surprise the reader.
Yeah.
Erica's always doing that.
Oh,
always doing it.
So,
Yeah, 100%. It's not, and the look helps. The character design is really, you know, striking. But I mean, she's always like surprising you.
Yeah, the things she says and does.
Yeah. All right. Best panel. So jump to page 12, and I don't think this will be yours.
That's pretty close to mine.
Okay, so page 12, and it is that first image of her coming out of the woods. It's the panel 4 down there in the corner. She's coming out of the woods. What is it?
That's the same one I have.
I think it would be. I thought you could find the monster images. So she's coming out of the woods, and she is like, she's got the two biggest knives that she carries anywhere in this book. They are dripping with gore. She's got like, I mean, it's up to her elbows with you know, blood gore. It's streaked all over her shirt, her face mask, and her eye is just bugged out. I mean, she is still like surging with adrenaline. She's that little kid sitting there.
She's on the edge.
Yeah, it's like the perfect introduction to this character.
I agree. That's the actual panel I had. I thought I was on page 4, but no, I was on page 12, panel 4. I had my numbers backwards. Yeah, that's the one.
So good. All right, Sam, what's your best dialogue?
All right, so I had a hard time down like a one-liner or just one panel. So I went with the whole conversation. When she got, it's probably the same conversation a bit.
Maybe.
But it's when she gets interrogated by the sheriff. It's like basically page 58 through 63, and they're having her back and forth, and he's getting upset, and he goes, "I feel like you're interrogating me." She goes, "Yeah." And then it's like, you know, and she's telling him, like, "You want to get a call? You'll have to release me." And he ends up releasing her before he gets the call because she's made him side with her or whatever. But that whole conversation was amazing.
That was my runner-up. I had the same thing. There's not a lot of one-liners here. It's just really intriguing conversations. And so mine is when her and James have decided to go into the woods to fight this monster, and they go to House Depot. And she's talking to the chainsaw salesman. That was my favorite one.
That's one if you drop it, I'll cut through anything.
I'm gonna read a couple of little snippets.
Yeah.
So the guy's like, I get professionals in here a lot, landscapers and that sort. They swear by this model. It can tear through just about any woods you could want, but it's got these sensors. If you drop it or lose control of the handle, it'll stop dead before it stops you dead. Now, you know, I got these crappy model, rundown models that you can drop, and they won't stop going until they've chewed through your leg or just about anything. Those beasts have a mind of their own, but I don't like selling those models. If you're going to do a thing right, do a thing, you're going to want to do it right. You want top of the line. And then it cuts to Erica. Can I see the crappy rundown models? He's like, sorry? She's like, yeah, the ones that keep ripping through anything and everything, like they've got a mind of their own. Ma'am, I think you've misunderstood. Nah, I want to see those models, Henry. Please, I don't have much time. And then he sees her basket, all the craziness in it. And James comes running up with a pair of like choppers. He says, look at these things. It's scary, right? She goes, yeah, put it in the cart. And they just cut back to the guy, and he's just got his hands on his head. Ma'am?
Shocked face.
And then she says, which of these is the wildest, but won't get caught on something unusual if it gets in the way? Something that'll just rip through. And cordless. I need cordless.
This is the most dangerous one. Take this. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really good one.
Yeah, but you're right. There's not one-liners in here. It's not like single individual little lines. It's conversations that sort of like reveal who Erica is.
Yep.
All right. So best full page spread. You have to jump over to page 35.
Man,
can I steal you again?
I like it though. I got another one though.
And that is like almost like the perfect horror image.
Yeah,
because like Tommy's just going about his day, and he hears something, looks over his shoulder, and he can't see anything, but the monster is there, almost hovering over him, you know, just dripping with gore off of his face. He's got those multiple eyes, the too many arms, the legs that move wrong, all that kind of stuff, and Tommy is none the wiser.
Unaware. It's an unseen about the story, man. They do so good with that.
Yeah, and that they're making this into a show, and that they need to have that be a scene in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's making a show. It's going to be good, probably. Hopefully. Anywho, mine, so you did steal mine. I like that one, but I also had a runner-up. I just don't know how I felt about it, so we're going to use it anyways. on page 27, and it's a monster ripping a small child in two with gore everywhere. And that's another scary scene. It's just crazy.
It's unsettling.
It's, yeah, that is stuff of nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah, I had about five that I had screenshotted of the full page spreads. Like, Werther Dellinger has a real talent for that.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
All right, so our last award is the episode specific one, and this one, and this week, because of what we're covering, it's going to be best moment that scarred a character for life. And the correct answer is all of them. But Sam, who did you select?
I picked Tommy. So when he was in a cave and he found his dead sister's body, and she was fighting this invisible monster, and then she does the gold thing. I was still stuck on it. Done the gold thing, and then he sees the monster and realizes what's going on. That dude's scarred for life. Just from finding his sister's mutilated body and then seeing the monster. That would be traumatic.
Yeah, never be the same.
Yep.
I went with, I'm not sure how to say her name, but Beyond Bayan. The little girl that the monster didn't quite kill.
Oh, yeah.
Who'd been in the cave for almost, she was like one of the first kids taken, and somehow she's managed to stay alive. I don't even want to think about how she has managed to stay alive all this time. Because it's been weeks and weeks and weeks that this has been happening. Maybe months.
Yeah.
And so she's been in the cave all this time and probably having to do horrific things to stay alive. But she's been watching this thing bring in other kids and eat them right in front of her. That kid doesn't have a chance at a normal life.
No, and what? Well, the way Erica talked about it, though, once you grow up, you forget about the monster stuff. You don't remember that. That's why she told James he's lucky that he's still young. And then once he loses the sight of the monsters, he would outgrow the memory of it. But maybe she has a chance.
I hope so. That seems like a lot to have to.
That's like, even if she doesn't remember the monsters, that's still the same scenario she was in.
Yeah.
That would be bad.
I think a sheriff's going to have a rough go of things, too.
Yeah, lucky for him, though. He ain't seen the monster.
Yeah, but all those kids, though, they were on. It was on his watch.
That's true.
And you can tell he's feeling that, the weight of that.
Yeah.
All right, you want to cast this guy?
Yes. I think I've done pretty good.
I got a couple of good ones. A couple I'm not so sure about. All right, let's get into it. So I'm first out of the gate on Erica Slaughter. And I'm going to go with the right answer, Anya Taylor-Joy.
I agree, 100%.
I mean, it looks like they're drawing her.
I think so. I mean, she can do it. Well, she is the only pick. There is another girl that I considered, Chloe Grace.
Yeah.
For the action.
Yeah. Most
stuff, I think Anya Taylor-Joy is the 100% right answer.
And I see some fan casts online have Florence Pugh as Erica. And I can almost see that. If Anya Taylor-Joy didn't exist, maybe.
Yeah.
But we live in a universe where she does.
And I do think they drawed her. I agree with you.
Yeah. All right, Sam, who you got for James?
All right, James is a younger kid, and this is a pick because he's Walker Scobell. He's from the Adam Project on Netflix, is what I know him from.
Oh, yeah.
So, I thought he'd be pretty good. He could do it. I think he's 13-ish, 14 now.
Yeah. I'm using my time machine pick on on James this week. Because this guy, I'd forgotten how long in the past Ford v. Ferrari was. Because I wanted to cast the kid that plays Christian Bale's son in that movie, Noah Jupe.
Yeah.
But he's like 18 now. So he's too old to play James.
Yeah.
But I think he would have been perfect for the role a couple years ago. Yep. So
I win by default.
Yeah.
But your time machine pick's good.
Yeah, no, that was a good choice. I wish I thought of him. Okay, Aaron Slaughter. We're going to have to, like, he's an adult, so we can play with the ages a little bit. But we're going to have a gap between, what's that?
So Aaron Slaughter, for just this volume, was technically not in it. He was just the voice.
Yeah, he was the voice on the phone. Yeah.
So I want to just clear for everybody, he's not read everything like we have.
Yeah, that's true. Aaron becomes important shortly, and then is a is a lingering presence for the whole series. Aaron's an important character.
So he's the guy on the voice. Only say his name once. So for, we're casting Aaron as the actual voice on the phone.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have done him for this book, but.
Yeah. No, you done right. Because as soon as you said, I knew who it was. I already knew who I was going to cast. I was like, well, he's not actually in this.
Okay. Well, you may have another one on me then, because I went with Donald Glover.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I think I don't know.
He's a little old.
He's a little old for it. The age gap's going to be bigger because, like in the comic, he's just like a little bit older than Erica, not a lot. It's going to be a pretty big age gap here, but I just like Donald Glover, and he's a very talented actor, and I could see him kind of doing the vulnerable stuff that Aaron does later on. So, but it's not the right answer. Go ahead, tell me who you got.
So, just because I know the character and all that stuff, but Chance Perdomo. He's from Chilling Tales of Sabrina from Netflix. He played Ambrose in that show. And that's Aaron from this.
Okay.
You know, he's just a voice.
Dude, he looks the part.
I mean, that's what I said. Because I knew who he is. So we obviously know who Aaron is later on. Almost looks like they drawed him.
Yeah, it does. No joke. Yeah, he's a little of a bigger guy than Aaron is. Aaron's pretty slight. Yeah. But other than that, he just looks like him.
He looks like Aaron. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, you definitely know that one. Oh. All right, then we'll move on quickly. I don't like giving you all these dubs. All right, you go for Tommy.
So Tommy, he's a little old for Tommy, but Tommy's obviously out of high school, college age, whatever. So he's an older guy. But Colton Haynes, he was in the Arrow. He played Roy Harper in Arrow. The red Arrow guy. But Colton Haynes.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely could see that.
Yeah.
You may have won all these, dude. But for Tommy, I went with Tom Holland.
I thought about it, man. Tommy's a bigger guy. Tom Holland is on the small side, to say the least.
Well, but he is going to be standing next to Anya Taylor-Joy, who's a very small lady. So we might be able to disguise that he's not a giant dude. Anyway, okay. my whole thought was like, even though he's the antagonist, he's the guy you want to empathize with, and it is so easy to get on Tom Holland's side. He's a very likable guy. I think that part of what you need for the Tommy character, I think he would just nail. Because you want to like the guy. Even when he's doing stuff you know is hindering the actual plan, the actual solution, he's tearing apart.
Yeah.
But like you still get him, and you want to like him. So
he still looks really young. I almost cast him as James. I really thought about
James. He really does. A little bit. I wish I'd aged like that.
Yeah.
You probably won that one too. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I may have this one. I've got a good sheriff.
We'll see.
Man, you're looking awful smug. You may have this one too.
I'm pretty good.
Okay, I'm with Ben Affleck.
Yeah, I got you.
I think Ben does that whole like beaten down thing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he's sober, I mean, he does it. You know, like. You can just see, like, there's a lot of weight on this guy's shoulders. Like, he does that really well. So,
yeah, he feels that way in real life a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. We've all seen the meme of him just outside smoking, just looking up in the sky.
I feel for the dude. I do.
Yeah. This guy, I know he's got a pretty privileged life right now, but he's seen some things.
Yeah. All right,
steal another one.
Sheriff Joe. Remember the scene in the interrogation? But he's talking back and forth, all that stuff. Put Nick Offerman in that scene with the mustache, his voice talking to her with authority back and forth, and just some of the stuff is said. That's Nick Offerman, man.
This is the first one I'm gonna push back on you. I don't really see that.
I like Nick Offerman. He does some comedy stuff, yes, but there was a show we just watched. He was in, played a real serious part in it with the mustache. I'm like, man, that's Nick. As a sheriff, I could see him doing it.
I think I took the dub on that one.
I'll let you have it, but I still think it was
phenomenal. You've already won 4 out of the 5, so
I know.
you've already automatically won the week, so it doesn't matter. All right, who's your wild card?
So I did actually do a real pick. I almost done my normal routine. Like, it's been a while. Like, I'll do a real pick this time. Like, I really wanted to do it, but
we're basically kicking off a third season here. So
I've done something a little different.
Okay.
What I did was I cast
I respect it.
So I cast her doll, the octopus.
Okay.
It's still a weird pick, so
yeah.
It's for the voice. I'm gonna do Andy Serkis.
Solid.
He can do any kind of weird, creepy voice you can think of. And her, I'm just picturing this weird ghostly voice come out of this little tiny octopus. I'm like, oh man, Andy can do that.
All right.
Or something going along those lines.
The man, I can't believe I'm blanking on this guy's name. But I heard a voice when I listened to him, but it was the guy from the original It. Tim Curry. Tim Curry. Yeah. That was the voice I kind of heard from that thing.
Well, I don't know. Like when they showed the ghost looking person, I don't know. It was like the little creepy looking almost kid
head
face on it. So I was like, I don't know. Because I thought about Willem Dafoe because he can do real creepy stuff.
Yeah.
I like Andy Serkis because you can take that in any direction with that guy.
Yeah, I love the joke about Willem Dafoe, like from Spider-Man, like he's creepier with the mask off. Why did something similar? You cast a voice actor for this thing, and I'm going to cast a mocap actor.
Okay.
And so for the monsters, I want it to be pure CGI. I want somebody on set doing the mocap for this thing. So I was thinking, because there's a guy who moved just creepily, the way he moved in a movie. And I was like, that would work for these monsters. I want him on set making the other actors uncomfortable. So I went with make sure I got the right Skarsgård here, Bill Skarsgård, the guy who was Pennywise in the new It movies. Like every one of his mannerisms, the way he moved was creepy. I'm like, that guy needs to be on set, ooking everybody out.
Yeah, and he could too, because I thought about him for being the voice for the octopus too. So yeah. He can make him double talent. You can do the voice for the octopus and make you do the motion.
There we go. We'll save some money.
There you go. I like it. So Bill Skarsgård for the win.
All right. Look at that. All right, bud. Well, so for episode 2 of season 3 here, you get the next pick. So what you got?
All right. So since it's October, it's close to Halloween. I'm keeping with the spooky vibe Jamie started with. So we'll go with Deceased. It's a DC run of zombies, basically. It's a great story. It's going to be a fun time next week.
Yeah, and I have read this as well, and it is a blast. And it's one of those DC Elseworlds stories where anything can happen. Because it's not canon, so all bets are off. Anybody can buy it.
Yep. We're going to find out.
Yeah, it's a good time. All right, well, I think we're done here. Salute.
See ya.
Later.